Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Yes, opening day at Woodbine, and we do want to thank them for their sponsorship. I know a lot of our viewers enjoy the Woodbine racing, as do I. And again, we will likely be making our return visit after like a three-year pandemic absence. Expect to be up there for the Woodbine Mile in September. Really looking forward to it because we always have a great time up there. And we'll talk Woodbine. We'll get to that in a moment. Do want to alert you a little bit later on in the program. We'll talk some Oaklawn with Nancy Holthus. They have a nice day down there with the Oaklawn Handicap and a nice little three-year-old stake that has a win and you're in component to the Preakness. So a nice day down at Woodbine, but we'll get to that a little later. But as I say, we'll start a little Woodbine, and we'll talk Woodbine and Keeneland with our first guest, Ellis Starr, National Racing Analyst from Equibase, and you can find him at other venues as well, including making Play of the Day type selections on the Woodbine website. But he has a nice little article up on the Woodbine website talking about handicapping early in the meet. And I said it earlier on the handicapping show, Woodbine is similar a little bit also to Finger Lakes over the years. A lot of the outfits, when the season ends, they go to the sidelines and the horses get a little break and don't come back until the season starts the next year. And so the handicapping at the beginning of meets like that is maybe a little bit intriguing and different. Ellis, as I say, wrote an interesting article you can catch on the Woodbine website, and we'll talk a little bit about it this morning. Ellis, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good morning, racing fans. Yeah, it's very cool that Woodbine asked me to do this, and it's unique this year. I mean, because this is the second or third year of Turfway's new Tapeta, which is upgraded, and such big fields, and also Gulfstream's second year of their Tapeta full year they had. And so not a lot, but a number of horses wintered at Gulfstream and Turfway, and so you've got horses not only have been off that stable at Woodbine, have been off since November, December, but you've got horses that have been running at Gulfstream and Turfway. And so it becomes unique to kind of figure out, okay, what horses fired well off that layoff last year at Woodbine, the fate at Woodbine, but then also what the plans were by the trainers that took horses to Turfway and Gulfstream this winter, and were they just staying in shape? Did they do well? And so it creates a unique mix, which made the writing the article so fun. It can be found on woodbine.com under the news tab. It's just called How to Handicap and Bet Woodbine's New Season. And I kind of just outlined what I think the important things were, so with some pictures from past performances that people can use looking at the races the opening couple weeks when you've got, they're only running 5 and 5.5 on the Tapeta, no turf yet, no longer races, and what to eliminate as well as what to pick.
And I saw you mention it in the article, and I mentioned it earlier as well. Traditionally, a lot of outfits will take that time at the end of the meet. The horses get to lay up a little bit and don't come back until the beginning of the meet. But as you said, there have been some outfits that have gone south, particularly this year. Marty Drexler's down there. Kevin Attard had horses. Josie Carroll with a few at some venues. So those horses will come up with maybe a little bit of fitness edge, but when you're handicapping, and you mentioned it, and I've talked about this when I've done handicapping at Woodbine this time of year also, you're either looking for those horses that come up and already have a little fitness, or look in the PPs for horses that have done okay off a layoff before. And I'll also say the beginning of a meet, the first few days, I start to get a feel for maybe a trainer or two who's doing well early in the meet with horses off the layoff.
Yeah, well, Stats Racelens, other things give you some things, but I mean, I can really specifically do queries, which I did before handicapping for the story and for my race of the day, where looking at trainers who specifically did well off, I think it was 120 to 180 days, Woodbine 5 and 5.5 furlongs, and that narrowed it down to specifically the ones last year, and there weren't a lot. I also add to your list Christopher Davis, who trains for a number of stables, is starting horses at Woodbine, as Wesley Ward, too. So those are two. And Ward, of course, is known for having a lot of all-weather type horses at all the tracks that run all weather, as well as, of course, his fantastic two-year-olds at Keeneland.
And I will note that, you know, for folks who maybe don't play Woodbine a lot, you will find a lot of familiar names up there, particularly a friend of ours. We always have him sit in with us when we're doing the shows up on the backstretch at Saratoga, Mark Cassie. And they announced the Sovereign Awards the other day, which are the Canadian equivalent to the Eclipse Awards. The trainer of the year last year, Mark Cassie, I think it was like his 16th Sovereign Award.
He has such a big stable, of course, and he winters in Florida where his farm is, and then brings them up at Laba ready to go. But he runs so many horses there. He's so good for Woodbine Racing.
Yeah, no question about it. And that, as I say, the number was astonishing to read what he had done. And I'll also note for folks who don't follow Woodbine, and I'll ask you if you have some fun with it, because I jump in every once in a while. They have the 20-cent pick plays, and you would think that's going to suck the value out of it. But if you play a 20-cent pick four and you can get a horse in there, a horse or two with a little bit of a price, you still get a decent little payoff.
Oh, everything's fantastic. I actually play the super high five once the pool gets up to something there, because you can even not, it's a jackpot bet, but you can even hit the five and hit for $500, $600, $700 on a $24 bet. And the last race of the card, and it's usually a full field of cheap maiden claimers or something like that. But boy, is it fun to handicap and take a shot for $20 going for a few hundred. If you're right, $4,000 or $5,000.
Yeah, and with the smaller increments on their plays, you can put together a decent-sized ticket for, as you say, a reasonable amount of money. So it's fun. Let's see if we can help people have some fun today and take a look at a couple of races up at Woodbine. The sixth race today, optional claimer with the non-winners in one condition, 5 furlongs is the trip. And, man, as I looked around this field, it's kind of fun. First of all, speaking of familiar names, Wesley Ward has Gavernie in here coming off a start on the synthetic at Turfway. Kevin Attard, a horse that had been racing at the fairgrounds this winter, Basalt Street. Takoda, I think, is interesting. That one hasn't been seen since the end of the season. Diamond Crush, the same. Those are coming off layoffs. But I pulled up a replay of Bada Swing, the number 12 horse, Barbara Minshall trainee. This is going back almost a year, the 1st of May last year. Bada Swing's the number 3 horse here in this replay. Gets it done pretty nicely in a career debut. But again, kind of going back to what we were talking about, winning in the first start of the career is essentially winning off a layoff. So this horse has already done it. So Bada Swing to me was a little bit interesting in here. What did you see in race number 6 this afternoon?
Yeah, I can't argue. I mean, course cost $160,000 as a yearling at Keeneland in 21, certainly. I think you've got a lot of issues when you look at a race like this with horses that are coming back fresh, not the ones that have wintered, like I said, at Turfway or Gulfstream. And the ones that are coming back fresh, if they showed any speed at all, they're going to be just gunning for the lead. And I got 4 here that gun for the lead. Gavernie, who you mentioned, for Wesley Ward, the 9 Mitzi, 8 Gavernie, the 9 Mitzi, the 12 you mentioned, Bada Swing, the 13 Forest B, if draws in. So I went looking for stalkers, and I landed on 3. And this is my race of the day play, which people can get by going to Woodbine.com and clicking on wagering, and my name is on there, and you can also do it if you follow me on Twitter at UberCapper. I'm going to start with the 3, Fire and Spice. 2 wins in 5 seconds, so not as many wins as we'd like, but still 6 for 7, first or second, 2 wins in 4 seconds on the synthetic, and those were all at Gulfstream. Of course, have been running since last December 2021, and run very well in many races at this level, maybe stuck at the level, 4 seconds in 5 races at the 5-furlong trip on turf or on all weather, but gets Hernandez and has the right style to be getting first run on this. The best race came when stalking at 5th in the early stages off of 22 1/4, which you'll probably get today. She will, and run well. Then you got a couple prices. The 4 Trading Bay, just outside. This is the deepest closer in the field, and if they sizzle early, this horse may be able to get up a decent price, 8-1 morning line. Comes in with a 59 flat, best of 48, 5 furlong work. I like you know, good workouts. I don't, as I said in my article, I don't discount slow workouts, but I love fast workouts. And this horse says, this horse is in form, ran fourth in the 2022, not debut, but June to October, but won from December 21 to April 22 in that layoff last year with Eswan Floros, who's riding today. So that's a pattern I really like at eight. And then one horse to throw in for the exacta box, the 7 Old Blondie, opening at 20-1. Not bad, 5-12, first or second on the all-weather, been off since November. Again, a great race last year on the comeback, October to April, won by a half a length, 7-1 at the one lower allowance level, was 7-1 that day. And then the last race off the layoff, a good layoff, was pretty bad, but so what? Gets Emma Jane Wilson, the works are consistent, you're getting 20-1. So 3-4-7 exacta box, look for a couple win bets, maybe a win place bet on Old Blondie. Definitely a race that I'm really looking forward to, race 6 today at Woodbine.
I like it. All right, and before we went on the air, I was asking if you had any other ideas, and you said you thought you might have something in race number 9. It's a conditional claimer. They'll go 5 furlongs. Your thoughts in what is, yeah, the finale today at Woodbine?
Well, it was fun because after I wrote the article, Seth, I decided to put it in action and say what horses kind of fit the conditions. Two of them now, the morning lines out, ended up a little low odds, but this horse in race 9, as I again, I gave 3 picks at the end of the article, is number 5, Sneaky Rebel, opening at 6-1. And it fit one of the conditions I liked in that it's fired really well last year. October 21 off the end of the year, came back in April 22, so that 6-month layoff, and won off the pace, didn't need the lead, then kind of just didn't do that well running in non-winners of 2 claimer, which is this is, but the works are okay. 2-4 furlong workouts. Hernandez, again, who did very well last year, won about 15% of his races. A decent trainer in Patrick Dixon. A race that could be loaded with speed, short field. Sneaky Rebel, the 5 horse in the 9th, fits the example in the article.
I like it. 6-1 on the morning line. Ellis, as I said at the top of the show and in the handicapping show earlier, you also do some selections for the Keeneland website, and as we talked before we went on the air, you're at Keeneland. And so first of all, I talked earlier, up on the wall I have 4 different tracks which I can look at, and one of them I have the live signal, and there Dan just pulled it up, the live signal from the Keeneland paddock. I said it looked a little overcast because I handicapped Keeneland on the handicapping show earlier, and I said I'm tossing out turf picks, keeping my fingers crossed with the rain yesterday, and it does look a little overcast, but you can see people walking around. So you're at Keeneland right now, so update us on the weather.
All right, well, I'm not a meteorologist, and of course they can be wrong and get a lot less grief than handicappers can, but the sun's breaking through. We don't expect any more rain. Some radiant heat's going to come out. The track was open for training. It looks like it's on the side of good. It might be fast by the first race. Keeneland hardly ever takes races on the grass. Unless pouring, will probably be good on the grass. And I think we're going to go for the turf races today. But scratches and changes will be out about another half an hour or so. We'll know for sure.
And your thoughts on the Keeneland meet so far? I think it's been a lot of fun. Certainly, Tapitrice certainly looked good and gets moves on to the Derby as a part of the Pletcher arsenal. And as is typical up in our area, but also seems like springtime down at Keeneland, weather overall has been kind of iffy. I mean, there's been some beautiful days and some days where it looked a little cool and rainy, but overall, how's the Keeneland meet been treating you so far?
It's been good in terms of betting. You know, there's a lot of races that are, you toss your hands up, but they're pretty good. They had a great day yesterday, and we've watched a lot of great racing, as you said, and the 2-year-olds. I'm looking for this horse that ran the other day for Wesley Ward. I believe it was on Thursday. Another monster, American Rattle.
All right.
Who ran off the screen by 10 lengths. This is the kind of horse that Wesley got, I should say. He's won 3 out of the 4 2-year-old races. Keep your eye on all the 2-year-old races. He's just dominating them. 2 of his horses came from off the pace, which is quite unusual. But some great 2-year-old racing that people should start making notes of. And certainly, as you mentioned, the Bluegrass Stakes was really fantastic.
Yeah, when the Wesley Ward runner won big the other day, I thought, Royal Ascot.
that's what he's doing. He's paying for Ascot. Especially for the ones that carry the Stone Streets colors.
Exactly.
They love going England.
Make your reservation. All right, let's take a look at the 2 stakes today at Keeneland. We'll start things off. Race number 8 is the Elkhorn Grade 2 event, $350,000, a mile and a half on the grass. I pulled up the replay of the horse that I like in here, Value Engineering. The Mac D'Armada Value Engineering is going to be the number 10 horse here. Gets it done by 3/4 of a length. I just thought in the form this horse has been in down at Gulfstream, I'd tilt in this direction. Not with a lot of confidence, but I'm going to use that one. I thought Rising Empire was playable. The Venerable Channel Maker is interesting. And, of course, Red Knight, who in the previous start for Value Engineering, Red Knight in the McKnight had beaten Value Engineering. So that one's interesting to me as well. But I could point to 2 or 3 others I would have kind of equal confidence with. What did you see in the Elkhorn?
Yeah, this is a race of the week for Equibase, and if you go to my Twitter again, at UberCapper, you can get the written analysis for this race. I think Maker has aces here. This just goes to show Maker's acuity with these horses. Value Engineering can only run 1.375 or more one time in 15 races before Maker bought him privately, Michael Huey bought him. And since then, a win at 1.58, a second in the McKnight, and then the win in the Mac D'Armada. I mean, just getting these horses that have these sustained pace runs and do this kind of thing, back-to-back 112 Equibase Speed Figures, it'll be slightly higher odds than stablemate Red Knight, who I can't knock at all. I read Ortiz gets off to ride for Chad Brown, highest honors. I get that. I'm only using highest honors in second and third. I'll get to why in a sec. But Red Knight's actually run well here. He won the Sycamore Stakes in October of 2020, which is the fall equivalent of the Elkhorn. He was 8th in the Sycamore last year, but only beaten the length. It was a blanket 6-horse finish, and he had traffic trouble as well. So he ran really well, and then he got back in form. Maker picks his spots. He's been working at Keeneland. So I'm going to look at Value Engineering and Red Knight, probably 2-1 or more. That was one of the highest odds. I think I can do it that way. And then I'm going to use those two and throw in another mystery for Chris Block, who ran huge in the John Connolly Stakes at Sam Houston, which is 1.5 miles. And he ran second at Keeneland previously. I forgot when it was. Second at Keeneland in the Elkhorn last year. That's right. So he's going to be a decent price. And the 9 Verstappen, who is going to be under bet because of Turfway form, but Turfway form and all weather transfers to the turf just great. And he's run 3 mile and quarter races in a row, win a win and a second. He can run 1.5 miles. He's by Warfront. And of you'll remember this, Paint Celeb, that
right.
Beautiful European horse decades ago practically. He's out of a Paint Celeb mare, Andromeda Galaxy. And he was bred in the U.S., so they brought this mare here to breed. And he's got a good, he's only run 11 times as a 4-year-old. He's still improving. He could be also a horse to take. So I'm going to play a trifecta box of all 4, another mystery Value Engineering, Red Knight, and Verstappen. I'm going to play another trifecta with those 4 over highest honors in second and third, and hopefully this is going to be a really nice outcome and another win in the marathon for Mike Maker.
Yeah, and we were down at Gulfstream for the Florida Derby, and I was kind of running back and forth and trying to tape some things for the Sunday recap show, talking to owners and trainers and jockeys after wins, and I caught up with Michael Dubb after the win in the marathon down there with therapists, who they had claimed 2 races before for $50,000.
Yeah.
And Michael Dubb was saying, you know, he asked the trainer, Mike Maker, how do you figure that out? We can jump in and get a horse and then stretch him out. And he said, I look at the breeding and whatnot, and it all works out. And it certainly does work out in the marathons for Mike Maker.
He's a savant when it comes to marathon horses.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
No, incredible. All right. Also, the Ben Ali on the Keeneland card today. The 9th race, Grade 3 event for 4-year-olds and up, going 1 mile and 3/16. I wasn't quite sure what to do in here, so I kind of defaulted over to Pioneer of Medina. I'll pull up the Mineshaft. This is 2 races back for Pioneer of Medina. Pioneer Medina is going to be the number 7 horse here down at the fairgrounds. And again, this is back in February. Subsequently ran poorly in the New Orleans Classic, but I went back to him. But Skippy Longstocking, certainly a player. I've always liked Rattle and Roll. He also was in this New Orleans, in the New Orleans Classic and ran 4th in there. in his four-year-old debut. Tawny Port is a little bit interesting. It's kind of an intriguing puzzle to me. I'm interested to see where you went in the Ben Ali.
Well, it's interesting because Parmigiani, as you said, he had three good races in a row. I mean, very good. He took Lasix off and second the Holland Holiday to Skippy Longstocking and then won the Mineshaft in that. And I think Saez is out of town today, but he's been riding his rear end off, and I think they would have given him the boot anyway because they weren't happy with that ride. So they went to Gap Leon, who tore it up yesterday with four wins. I think he's got 14 or 16 now in like 45. I mean, he's really in front. He was kind of tied with Saez and Ortiz, but it's such a prestigious riding title here. Parmigiani is certainly one of my picks. I can't knock him if he runs back to second, third, and fourth back. Good, and he'll certainly run well from the inside. And the favorite's Skippy Longstocking. He's won two out of three, a little overmatched in the Pegasus to Art Collector. I don't think he's good at 9 furlongs. He won the West Virginia Derby. So I call it mile 3/16, 9 furlongs, by the way. He was fifth in the Preakness, of course. But he's won two out of three good races with Irad, who's riding here. But if I'm looking at the horse's best races, and again, I'm going to reference the Echo Bay Speed Figure only last after I look at those races that are representative today. Skippy Longstocking's got a 105 from the Harlem Holiday, a 106 from the Challenger. Parmigiani's got a 102 from the Harlem Holiday, a 109 from the Mineshaft. And then I look at Trademark. And Trademark 6-1, the two horse here. At the end of last year, it's weird because he was really highly regarded as a 3-year-old. He won his first two starts as a 2-year-old and then came back and they tried him the Sam Davis, the Tampa Derby, the Bluegrass, the Pat Day Mile, the Indiana Derby, the Ellis Park Derby. Lousy. But he matured last summer and came back and won a mile and eighth race at Keeneland on the 2X, beating a nice horse named St. Tappet. And he won easily in a field of 12. With a 106 figure, came right back to win the Commonwealth Turf, which was taken off the grass at Churchill, and the next time out, won by 4 lengths. And then he was off for the winter. I think that comeback on March 11th in the Challenger this year was just that, just a comeback. It didn't mean a thing. They're pointing to this all along. They're waiting to get back to Keeneland. Vicky Oliver is doing it. Rafael Barano with her have had a pretty good year down at Oaklawn. And I got a feeling Trademark, if he runs back to his race at Keeneland last fall, could push the mild upset here. So I'm betting him to win, and I'm going to play an exacta and trifecta box with Parmigiani, Trademark, and Skippy Longstocking. One thing I want to say is Rattlin' Roll is as the second choice in the morning line at 3-1, and I just think that's a bad morning line because he won the Oklahoma Derby in his last two races, the Marathon on Breeders' Cup undercard, the Grade 2, and then the New Orleans Classic. He didn't show anything in either race. I can't bet a horse off of those two races.
Yeah, as you're saying that, I'm looking, that 3-1, I totally agree with you. That's a little short. I think the betting public will shy away based on. I like your pick, though, a Trademark. I mentioned earlier, Vicky Oliver is one of those trainers I always look at as maybe potentially having a little price here and there, particularly down in Kentucky. So I like the pick there. Ellis, before I let you go, any Derby thoughts? Forte, Practical Move, Angel of Empire, I caught a little of that one in the future pool at 38-1. So I'm looking at a little Angel of Empire. Tappet Trice, certainly. And I'm curious what you make of, and I think the betting public is going to use a little of that Derma Sotogaki, the Japanese horse. I think that horse will take a little action. Derby thoughts?
Well, the Japanese horse, first of all, I'm hoping, well, no, it's not going to happen. I'm hoping Mandarin Hero gets in and we have three Japanese horses because he ran so well.
Totally agree.
His only race in the Sanity Derby. It's just unfortunate that I hope, but he has to get some defections. But look, Rich Strike got in last year, so who knows if Mandarin Hero is one of the two AEs, I'll be rooting for him. Hopefully not that somebody gets hurt, but maybe someone decides at the last minute they don't want to go. Look, Tappet Trice's race was a little tough. He can come back, but it was a tough battle. Forte's race was much easier. He took, really got floated out, made should improve. I always say that horses that have finished second in the preps get under bet. Mage is very interesting. Kings Barn, kind of people have been saying, his race was slow. But I'm telling you, that was a paid workout. I watched it again. He's got a shot. Certainly no knock again on Forte. And I can't remember the other horse that starts with a V. I should know.
Verifying.
The other Coxes.
Verifying.
interested in as well. So I'm going to watch the workouts again and get a look. But I'm looking right now, I'm thinking more about what price horses I want than the logical horses. So I'm thinking about King's Barnes. I'm thinking about Mage. I'm hoping Manor Hero gets in. And Dermis Odagake certainly has the form. It's been off a while, but the way they train their horses with those long gallops reminds me of Hardspun. And, you know, everybody's talking about Larry Jones' two-mile gallops. And it worked. I mean, he ran very well. He didn't win, but he ran really well in the Derby because of all that preparation.
And I totally agree on Mandarin Hero. I've said it the last couple of weeks. I thought that was a great race behind Practical Move. And it just with the points just sitting outside, 45 gets you in. Yeah. 45 actually has a couple of horses sitting out on tiebreakers and whatnot. But Mandarin Hero sitting with 40. But I totally agree. That would be a lot of fun if he got in, because I thought that was a great performance, taking a shot at the Santa Anita Derby.
And I know we're not talking about it, but I mean, I can see them going back. I can see why they went 1-5, but I like 1-4 better. I mean, yes, the 5 gets you a couple thirds, and then you get a second, you get in. But the 1-4 punishes a horse who ran as good as Mandarin Hero did. You know, Mage is in because he got 50. But that was 40, and so it's kind of unfortunate. Or Mage had a couple other points, I forget which, but it's kind of unfortunate. But, it, you know, certainly we're going to have a heck of a Preakness if some of those stick around that don't get in the Derby.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, it looks like it's shaping up to be a fun Triple Crown season. I'm not sure if we're pointing at solid superstars or not, but I think we're pointing at a fun series, no question about it, and that will kick things off in a couple of weeks in the Derby. Ellis, as always, appreciate the conversation. Again, we'll tell people to go check out your article looking at kicking things off handicapping-wise at Woodbine. You can find that at the Woodbine website or go to Ellis's Twitter account, which we've been showing the handle for throughout as well. But as I say, Ellis, always appreciate the conversation, and we will talk again.
Hey, thanks, Seth. I appreciate it, too, and I hope everybody makes a boatload of money today.
That is the game plan. Thanks, Ellis.
Bye.
Ellis Starr, National Racing Analyst from Equibase. All right, we'll take a little break. We'll come back. We'll hit on some news and notes, and then Nancy Holthus will join us a little bit down the road as well. So stay tuned. Racing Across America will continue.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
It's that time of year.
Forte wins!
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Practical Move has won the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Join us on Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. for the annual Capital OTB Kentucky Derby Seminar. Streaming live on the Capital OTB YouTube channel and other social platforms, join Seth Merrill, Anthony Mormito, and the Brooklyn Cowboy Kevin Cox for a comprehensive look at this year's Kentucky Derby.
Stone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Baba. These two arch rivals head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Welcome back. Have a few minutes before we get to Nancy Holthus, and I had pulled up some video that was available. Our friend Jenny Reese always does a great job working for the Kentucky Horsemen's Association when there's big action in Kentucky. And in a couple of weeks, there is very big action in Kentucky. But that means major players will be training down at Churchill, and Jenny Reese is usually banging around the backstretch, pulling up some videos of some of the connections to some of those important horses, and I was going to say none more important, but certainly among the important ones, the Todd Pletcher contingent of trainees. And Jenny on Thursday caught up with Todd. Todd had some of his horses work out over the past few days down at Churchill. And Jenny Reese caught up with Todd Pletcher to get some reaction and just some thoughts on some of his Derby contenders. So, again, this is going back to Thursday morning down at Churchill. Todd Pletcher.
Derby set up 5 weeks out. You know, I think that kind of puts you in a position where you get that extra week if you need it, and you have two or three works if you need them. And, you know, so, but I think all of them, look, they can all work with the right horse.
You also had Forte Sire Violin. Any similarities, you know, between the two of them?
Very physically very similar. Both almost identical markings, color. They look a lot alike. And mentally very straightforward horses, very professional. To train uncomplicated.
Can you expand a little bit more just on Forte mentally? Because his breeder told me that early on he was kind of like a shy horse, and now he certainly doesn't seem like it the way he comes to the paddock. And
no, he's gained his confidence. He's proud of himself, as he should be.
How, with him, you know, obviously he's been so consistent and steady. How much upside do you feel like is still there with him to kind of be unearthed?
Well, I mean, you know, what he seemed to really do is improve as he got to stretch out as a two-year-old. And, you know, when he got to Keeneland and ran the Breeders' Futurity, he handled the two turns so well and, you know, came back off the layoff to win it a mile and 16th. And then, you know, I loved the way he finished in the Florida Derby, you know, going a mile and an eighth for the first time. It's giving you confidence that he'll handle the added distance.
The lack of success for juvenile winners, did that enter into your plan for him as a three-year-old at all?
I'm sorry, the lack of what?
The lack of success for juvenile winners.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody kind of analyzes all these different aspects, and, you know, every year there's going to be 19 losing ways to get to the Derby. So, you know, the thing that I've always liked about Forte is he gives you the impression the older he gets, the better he's going to become, and, you know, as he gets a little bit stronger and fills out a little more. So, you know, sometimes the juvenile winners are really precocious, mature two-year-olds that kind of peak at that time of their careers, where this horse, I think, is still coming. You know, I think they're physically he's going to continue to improve.
Can we analyze it that your two Derby winners to date both went through Tampa at some point, and two of your big three here went through Tampa?
Yeah, I mean, Tampa's been a good route for us, you know, even when it hasn't been turned out into a Derby win. But, you know, it gives us some options to continue to develop horses. And, you know, I think it's important with a horse like King's Barnes that, you know, if you don't have an option like that to go into an allowance race, then sometimes you kind of throw him to the wolves, maybe a start before you'd like to.
He's only run a mile or more. So he was a horse from the beginning you thought was... Although I guess his first race would have been one turn at Gulfstream.
Yeah, it was a one turn mile. It was split in hairs. He was ready to run. There was a 6-furlong race that day and a mile race that day, and just felt like, you know, if there had been a 7/8 race, that's probably what we'd have done. But given the two options, we felt like a mile was better than six. And honestly, I think, you know, he would have won either race that day. If we had decided to go in the six, he'd have probably won that. But I'm glad we opted for the mile and it worked out, because, like I said earlier, he got a good education that day.
With the benefit of the hindsight of the Florida Derby, his ability to go, then cruise, and then go again. And a lot of horses, that could take a lot out of him. But as you look at it in hindsight, did it show you a lot in that? And how has he recovered from it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we thought on paper there wasn't a lot of speed in the Louisiana Derby. When it'd come out before we'd be placed, if we made a comfortable lead, that was fine. If we were stalking someone else, we were okay with that. There was a brief moment going into the first turn where it looked like the outside horse was going to clear him, and then suddenly switched leads, and, you know, he found himself a length in front and got an uncomfortable rhythm, and seemed like he was traveling well throughout. I could tell when he got to the far turn and switched leads, he kind of surged again, and, you know, just kept going. So you know, it was a comfortable trip for him. He got into good rhythm and a favorable pace scenario, but he delivered and he kept finishing, and the, you know, the final eighth of a mile was very good.
as demanding as the his last two finishes were, those final furlongs in the count of youth and in the Florida Derby. Did he,
I was just talking about King's Bar.
That's what I thought. So, I was going to say. Okay. I'm sorry.
I think it's underappreciated sometimes. You know how difficult it is to win from the post that he did in the Florida Derby, and he had a lot to do coming by me at the eighth pole, and I didn't think he could get up in time to win, much less win by kind of a comfortable length with his ears pricked, but you could see he really dropped down and finished strongly, and like I said earlier, to see him do that at a mile and eighth and finish the way he did gives you confidence stretching out.
And he's looks fine from the wear and tear on those last two races.
Yeah, he's had a tremendous winter and spring, and everything's went exactly the way we had scheduled it so far. So we're just looking for another 2 weeks of that.
Welcome back again, Todd Pletcher. There, that was Thursday morning after some of his horses had worked down at Churchill. He has Forte in there. He has Tapit Trice. He has King's Barnes. As his contingent, all solid players. And I mentioned before, and I should give you a little breakdown of where we are points-wise and who's kind of on the bubble. Disarm last week, last shot at Derby points in the Lexington. Right after the race, I thought he had still missed it because I wasn't quite sure of the points. Disarm just got in, though. Disarm now is at 46. I haven't heard a follow-up from them. Right after the race, they said they would have to kind of decide things. But I think the point of running in the Lexington was to chase points to get in. So we'll see. But Disarm is at 18 now. Just sitting on the outside looking in. At 21 on the points list, Jace's Road. Skinner, 22. Cyclone Mischief, 23. Major Dude, 24. And the aforementioned Mandarin Hero. I agree with Ellis. I'd love it if he got it. It was just a really nice performance. Pushing Practical Joke all the way. Mandarin Hero, the Japanese horse, is at 25. So would need some things to fall his way as far as the points list. So we'll see. But the horses that have made it in so far, normally you can go down the list, and particularly as you get down further, you start to feel, there's some horses that got in on points that maybe others would be better. I don't know. There aren't a whole lot in here that I would count out necessarily. I'm not saying they're likely winners, but I wouldn't necessarily be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked as last year's winner, certainly. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Nancy Holthus will join us. We'll take a little look at Oaklawn for this afternoon. Stay tuned.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player? To have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful. What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
As promised before the break, we are joined now by our friend Nancy Holthus from Oaklawn Park. Another nice day down at Oaklawn. Last week it was the Apple Blossom. Today, the Oaklawn Handicap, and a nice little three-year-old stake as well that could play into the Preakness. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Always happy to have you. And I will say, I talked to Jim Byers last week, talking Apple Blossom and more, and I said, boy, you guys, early in the season, it seems like you guys were snake bit as far as the weather. But about Arkansas Derby time, it seemed to change. And then I have the monitors up here on the wall in my studio. So earlier, we had the Oaklawn signal, and I saw you doing your dawn at the Downs program with Maggie Wolfendale, and it looked like a gorgeous day down there this morning.
Yeah, we got really lucky with some great weather today. It looks like we Mother Nature has been very nice to us the last couple of days.
Yeah.
So somebody did a very happy dance the last couple of days. So very, very happy to have some beautiful sunshine and not much wind today. So very happy to report that.
Yeah, as they say, it looked gorgeous. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that plays out through the afternoon. Before we get to this afternoon, I wanted to pull up a replay. As I say, we talked about the Apple Blossom last week, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it because I love the race. I was a little bit disappointed, though, because I'm a huge Clairiere fan, but given the performance in the Azari, I had to go with Secret Oath last week, and it was a four-horse field, which maybe is disappointing to people, but with Secret Oath and Clairiere having the potential to show down again, it seemed like the opportunity was there for something special, and that's the way it played out. Hot and Sultry was the horse that was maybe going to steal it, and Hot and Sultry did try to do that, but then Secret Oath took over, and Clairiere, we're watching the stretch run here, Clairiere puts on an incredible run down the stretch to get up. Chart margin is a neck. Again, it was only a four-horse field, but this was kind of a classic. Your thoughts last week in the Apple Blossom?
Yeah, it was inevitable, Seth, that, you know, Hot and Sultry was going to go out and set the pace, and it really did set up perfectly for Clairiere, the stretch, not to take away anything from Secret Oath battle that she put in, but a great ride by Tyler and Joelle. But ultimately, you know, Clairiere was the better that particular afternoon. Everybody, I think, was rooting for Wayne to get the job done with Secret Oath, but Clairiere just was able to get the nod and get that nice little effort late at the finish line. But ultimately, I think it was just Secret Oath had to be a little bit closer to the pace ultimately. But yeah, well done by all those in that four horse field. But yeah, Clairiere just a little bit better in this year's running of the Apple Blossom.
Yeah, really a fabulous addition there. It was only four horses, but as they say, kind of a classic performance. Winning trainer Steve Asmussen. I will also note there have been some fun storylines. You mentioned Wayne Lucas, and we'll talk Last Samurai in a few. But Wayne Lucas, a notable storyline down there. And Steve Asmussen, who I noted earlier on our handicapping show, he's just been having a great past couple of weekends, but it's been a nice meet overall. And yesterday, he became the winningest trainer of all time at Oaklawn. Not only that, his son was on board the winner.
Yeah, actually, he tied the record previously set by Bob Holthus. Today, he could potentially surpass that record. So, yeah, only one win away from becoming Oaklawn's all-time winningest trainer. So he set so many milestones throughout his career and potentially going to set another one today.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. You know, some of the horses I noted this meet going out for his wife. One of his sons is also owning some of his horses down there. So it's been a real family affair in the winner's circle on occasion. And just before we get to this afternoon, I have to ask, as we are approaching the end of the meet, normally when we talk to you guys, and I haven't seen any numbers, but normally I'm always amazed by how crazy the claim box is down there at Oaklawn. What's the claiming situation been like this season?
You know what? It's actually been a little less. We have a new claiming rule in regards to preference. So when you do claim a horse, the owner gets a preference for next app that they do want to claim a horse. So the numbers are a little bit down this year because of that new rule. There's the hot box, the claim box is still very much hot and heavy, but because of that new rule, it is a little bit down this year. But still multiple shakes for multiple horses, but it is they are a little bit less this year.
Yeah, interesting. All right, let's take a look at this afternoon, three nice stakes, and I kind of alluded to the three-year-old stakes. There's one for the fillies, one for the boys, and we start things out, Valley of the Vapors, which I assume refers to Oaklawn in some fashion because the David Hill book was called Vapors, and so I'm assuming that's a reference to the area, but the Valley of the Vapors for the three-year-old fillies going a mile. I took a little pop with Exponential Star. We're going to look at the win back on March 17th. Going to be the number one horse here going out for a 10-strike, our friend Marshall Graham. I thought that one was interesting. Marlaza, Classy Bridget. What are your thoughts in the Valley of the Vapors?
Yeah, the Valley of the Vapors does refer to the vapors from the natural hot spring. 10-strike had a phenomenal meeting. Amazing horsewoman by Lindsay Schultz does take on stakes runners and test winners for the first time, has broken from the rail in both career starts. Very impressive maiden score last out when stretching out to two turns for the first time. But it is hard for me to get past the number two, Merlaza, coming from the barn of trainer Brad Cox. I am going to go to the 8-5 favorite in here. Joel Rosario in for the afternoon also is one that takes on a stakes debut here this afternoon. Looks to sit off the pace, a very impressive three-length score last out as the favorite, and also finished in front of Stellar Lily last go, who breaks just to her inside last out. So confirmed at two turns. All three starts for Merlaza have been down to fairground, so also take on the Oaklawn surface today for the first time, and returns after several works at Churchill Downs. So Merlaza, I think, looks to be a standout in the first running of the Valley of the Vapors.
Yeah, as I say, I assume that was referring because the David Hill book, which is a great book on kind of the history and kind of the similarities between Oaklawn and Saratoga stand out in that book, the early casinos and the hot springs and whatnot. All right, let's move on to race number 10, the Oaklawn Handicap. And I mentioned it earlier, we were going to get a chance to talk about Last Samurai and the coach, who's had a great season so far down at Oaklawn, winning the Razorback and the Essex. And in fact, we're going to take a look at the stretch run of the Essex. Last Samurai is going to be the number 10. I got clever that day and played around a little bit with Classic Causeway, who I thought ran a very good second in here, led him most of the way, but could not hold up Last Samurai. I have them 1-2 again, but Charge It is really interesting in here this afternoon for Todd Pletcher. Your thoughts on the handicap?
Well, it's interesting. Charge is actually putting on blinkers. Showed some really impressive forward speed last at Gulfstream, going a mile in the grade Gulfstream mile. And ran a really good second, was the beaten favorite that day. It's actually one of two runs with an equipment change. Proxy is also putting on peak pieces, and that's kind of a side shadow roll, those fuzzy pieces that are going on the side of the bridle, if you will. So it's interesting, kind of a rematch with Stiletto Boy. Proxy is taking on out of that Santa Anita handicap at a mile and a quarter. So kind of a rematch from Southern California. Last Samurai could become just the third horse in Oaklawn's history to sweep the older two-turn series. Really good numbers buyer-wise for Last Samurai, has buyered in triple digits for the Razorback and the Essex. Last Samurai has really become a horse for course here at Oaklawn. He is the defending champ in the Oaklawn Handicap. Won it last year while racing for Dallas Stewart. Has been in the barn of Wayne Lucas and has done extremely well. I was joking in the winner's circle of the Razorback that he used the Pegasus, which he ran fourth, as a prep for the Great Razorback. And he's done extremely well. Has trained forwardly since that win in the Essex, a very nice half mile on April 8th and 47-3. And Wayne has had a phenomenal meeting. They're kind of calling his revival. Horses are running very, very well for the barn. Expect a really big effort. Christian Torres, our leading rider, he's surpassed $5 million in earnings, on target to become the winningest earnings rider in Oaklawn's history. It's hard to say not to back a horse that has trained very well over the surface. They're certainly not going to make it easy because that there is a solid amount of speed in here. I like the post for Last Samurai, the defending champ, but I got to back Coach on this one. Last Samurai, I think, is going to be able to get it done today.
Yeah, when a good horse is backed up by a fun story, and Wayne Lucas at the meet is obviously a fun story. That just makes it extra special. So looking forward to that. And I know with an early post time, you got to head to the pregame show. But just quickly, let's get a look at the Bathhouse Row. This is the one I mentioned earlier that has a Preakness win in your in angle for the three-year-olds. And I said earlier, these are three-year-olds who seem to show some promise and just didn't quite have enough promise to maybe continue on to Kentucky in a couple of weeks, but I think they're going to turn out, or some of them will turn out to be very nice ones as the year progresses. I pulled up the Rebel, and I think number three, Red Route One, making the big closing effort, is intriguing to me. Disappointed in the Arkansas Derby, but I'll look for a rebound. Victory Formation for Brad Cox, though, is threatening. Two Eagles River, Tappet Shoes, fun race. What did you see in the Bathhouse?
Well, it's interesting. I was a little disappointed, to be honest. Red Route won in Arkansas Derby, yeah. So they asked, and I thought he would show a little bit more. He did get away slow, but he kind of flattened out late. It almost kind of showed me, is he a better horse on the flop?
Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit disappointed, to be honest. He does get Lasix today, but I backed him in the Arkansas Derby. I'm going to back off today. I was really impressed, though, by Victory Formation in the race last year in the Smarty Jones, and I was hoping they would run him back here at Oaklawn, but they did take him to Fairgrounds at the Risen Star. He did not perform very well. He was the beaten favorite in the Risen Star. It was the other Cox contender, Angel of Empire, who really showed up and then went on to win the Arkansas Derby. And that actually turned out to be a big key race. Also, Two Phils showed up in that mile and an eighth event. Really impressed. He did show a little bit of early speed and then just kind of faltered in the late stretch. But I am going to go with Victory Formation. He does turn out to be a horse for course. He's got a very nice race here that he showed on New Year's Day. So, like Luis Saez, he knows this horse well. He was a winner on him his first two starts of his life, both of those sprinting. But Victory Formation, it is for me in that Bathhouse Row. And as you mentioned, it is a win and you're in for the Preakness. And also, mentioning the Oaklawn Handicap, it's an automatic berth to the Pimlico Special.
Oh, nice. I didn't realize that. Very nice. Yeah, nice stakes schedule today. Down at Oaklawn, and I say it to you all the time, I enjoy the Oaklawn racing. I think you can find good value down there. That has continued this season. I will also commend you because, as I say, I have the monitor with various tracks here as I get ready to do my afternoon show. I watch you and Jim Byers do the pregame show. That's always a lot of fun. You guys give out good information. I'm sure that will continue today, so we'll send you off to your TV set to get ready for a big afternoon down at Oaklawn, but we appreciate the visit.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Seth. Always appreciate the time.
Thanks. Nancy Holth is from Oaklawn. Again, really nice day today with the Oaklawn Handicap and those two three-year-old races as well, one for the fillies and one for the boys. So looking forward to a big day down at Oaklawn. Otherwise, we are approaching the top of the hour. That means I have to wrap it up. Hopefully, we gave you some good ideas all around. Opening day at Woodbine today. That should be a lot of fun. Some nice stakes action down at Keeneland, down at Oaklawn. I'll be looking at New York racing as well when we come back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. Do want to remind you once again, coming up in about a week and a half, it will be the annual Kentucky Derby Seminar, Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. I'll be in the studio here with Anthony Mormito and the Brooklyn Cowboy, Kevin Cox. You can see it here on the network and via Capital OTB's social media channels over on YouTube and beyond. So check us out going through a comprehensive look at the Derby this year on Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. Don't forget also, it's a fan appreciation day at the Queensbury branch. If you're a patron up in that direction, we'd love to have you stop by so we can say thank you to you. The fan appreciation day's food, vouchers, contest, always a lot of fun. So if you're up in that direction, stop by the Queensbury branch this afternoon for a fan appreciation day. Otherwise, I'm just looking at my notes. I don't think I have anything left to go. So we'll wrap it up on this Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us as always. Really appreciate it. Again, we'll be back on back in about an hour and a half or so for OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. I'm going to be looking at Oaklawn, Keeneland, and Aqueduct, and we'll have some more action as well as it's a Saturday, and Saturdays are always a lot of fun with plenty of stakes action, and today is no exception. So wrapping it up, thanking you for watching Racing Across America, but don't go away because we'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. See you then.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.